Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure for me to welcome you to today's call, where obviously we have quite a lot to tell you. We will start with an update on how trading has progressed in the third quarter, and we are also in a position to say a little more about our preferred option with regards to developing our precious metals refining operation. As you will be hearing quite a bit from me later on these recycling expansion plans, I would like to hand over to Filip, our CFO, who will talk about how business has progressed in the past few months. Filip?
Thank you, Marc, and also good afternoon to everybody. What we see is that overall group revenues remain stable in the third quarter compared to the same period in last year, 2012. There were, however, two different underlying trends. The product businesses, that is Catalysis, Energy Materials, and Performance Materials, saw an increase in revenues. And it should be noted that this was set against rather weak comparables in 2012. Therefore, it's certainly more appropriate to talk of stabilization in these activities rather than any pronounced recovery at this point. In contrast, in recycling, the effect of lower metal prices and some reduction in process volumes in Hoboken, which was linked to the second maintenance shutdown, had a negative impact on the revenues of the business group. As Marc indicated, we have determined our preferred next steps to grow our precious metals refining operations, and we'll speak about this in more detail in a moment. Our other growth investments across all business groups have made good progress, and a number of them have either come on stream in the third quarter or are scheduled to do so in the coming months. We also continue to focus on cost control and on adapting our industrial footprint. Examples of such measures are the closure of our zinc-based chemicals production facility in Australia, or the announced intention to reduce costs and improve competitiveness in our building products unit, where discussions are currently underway with employee representatives. Our free cash flows continue to be very strong. Over the quarter, we returned in total more than 80 million euros of cash to shareholders in the form of our interim dividend and share buybacks, and still further reduced our net debt compared to the level at the end of June. Looking at the outlook for 2013, we confirm our expectation to remain within the range that we provided to you already back in April. The more testing metal price environment does mean, however, that we expect to come in at the lower end of that range. So I propose we now briefly run through the evolution of each of the four business groups, and the first one being Catalysis. In Catalysis, revenues were up by 7%. In automotive catalysts, the revenue growth outpaced the growth in car production quite significantly in the quarter. But this was due to the positive effect from the consolidation of Umicore Shukobai. Overall, sales volumes in automotive catalysts evolved pretty much in line with growth in the market, but we do continue to see mixed effects. In Europe, the mix remains rather unfavorable year on year, but we have seen some stabilization in the overall car production levels and also a stabilization in the share of diesel as a percentage of that production. Umicore's specific platform mix in North America, which we outlined back in late July, persisted, and as a consequence, our revenues in the region did not grow quite as fast as the market. In other regions, on balance, our revenue evolution was in line with the market, with much of the growth being driven by a strong performance in China, where, as you know, we have a market-leading position, particularly in the highest added value platforms. In energy materials, revenues were up in all segments, resulting in 16% growth for the full business group. Now, it's important to set this in the context of what was a lackluster third quarter last year, particularly for the business unit's electro-optic materials and thin film products. In cobalt and specialty materials, we generated better revenues due to higher level of recycling and also better sales of cobalt and nickel-based compounds. In rechargeable battery materials, we saw a further increase in revenues, mainly driven by higher sales of high energy density cathode material that are used in top-end portable applications such as tablets and smartphones. In terms of our positioning for electrified vehicle platforms, we continue to make good progress and although order patterns are still rather erratic, the overall trend remains very positive. Now, looking at performance materials, we saw revenues evolve pretty much in line with global GDP, growing at 2%. In building products, revenues remain quite low, although we have clawed back some of the volumes that were lost in the first quarter of the year due to the very harsh winter conditions in Europe. Revenues were lower in electroplating and in technical materials, while in platinum engineered materials, revenues were up, which was influenced by the timing of some customer orders. In zinc chemicals, we generated high revenues due to better sales of products used in batteries and other applications like ceramics. However, still in zinc chemicals, the availability of residues for the recycling activities remained very low, which continued to put pressure on margins. The Element 6 abrasives activities reported some improvement in product mix and in revenues. Turning now to recycling. Here we clearly saw the impact of lower metal prices with revenues down by 20%. In precious metals refining, the effect of the lower metal prices was the main reason for the lower revenue generation. We also felt an impact from the second maintenance shutdown, which led to some reduction in treated volumes during this quarter. Overall, availability of the various waste streams remained supportive, with a higher availability of secondary residues and stable supplies of end-of-life materials. In the other recycling activities, we generated lower revenues in jewelry and industrial metals. And although product sales held up well here, we saw a lower throughput of materials in the refining operations, gold residues in particular. In precious metals management, the market conditions were less supportive and revenues were also down. If we look now at our ongoing growth investments, we continue to make good progress with several projects being commissioned in the past few months. These include the new Technology Development Center for Automotive Catalysts in Brazil, the AGD production line in France, which is ramping up production, and the new production capability for NMC cathode materials in China. There are a number of other investments that are set for completion in the coming months, including the new automotive catalyst technology centers in Japan and in China, and also the surface-treated zinc production line in Vivier in France, and the battery materials precursor plant in Korea. So, staying on the subject of investments, I will now hand over back to Mark, who will talk about our growth plans in precious metals refining activities.
Thank you, Philip. As you all know, addressing resource scarcity and closing the materials loop are key strategic drivers of Umicore and actually key features of our Vision 2015 strategy. We have been assessing growth options for recycling in general and precious metals refining in particular in quite great depth, and we have now reached a point where I can share with you our preferred option. The preferred option at this stage is, as you could read in the release this morning, is an expansion of the Hoboken facility to reach the capacity to process some 500,000 metric tons of materials to be processed per year. And that represents an increase of about 40%. To do this, we will need to invest around 100 million euro over a period of 2 years. And we have therefore engaged with the authorities to obtain the necessary permits for the investment. And I hope that this can be done by the middle of next year so that the investment can get underway shortly. Once the permits will have been secured, we will be in a position to submit the investment to the board for a final approval. For those of you who are not familiar with the Hoboken facility, it is really one of a kind, and I see clear advantages in building on what is a very successful operation and business model. The operation in Hoboken is the most complex precious metals recycling and refining operation in the world, and its success has been built on three main pillars. The first one is our ability to handle complexity. We're able to treat those residues that are the most challenging to recycle, those that contain the most impurities and the broadest range of metals. From these residues, we can recover 17 different metals, with outstanding recovery yields, and something that is also very important to the customers, a rapid turnaround time. Second pillar is that we are highly flexible. We are not dependent on any one source of materials and can treat around 200 different types of materials, ranging from byproducts of the non-ferrous metals industry to end-of-life materials. And finally, the reliability of the operations is a key factor in our success, and we deploy in Hoboken the most sophisticated sampling and assaying process. So while we continue to investigate other longer-term growth options that could entail investments outside Hoboken in the future, and I'll touch on those a little more in a moment, the best option to tap near-term growth opportunities in recycling is to build on the existing competencies and advantages that we have in place at the Hoboken facility today. In the first instance, the investment plan is focused on what we believe to be a supportive trend in the availability of complex residues. We see evidence that over the long term, the availability of secondary materials produced by the non-ferrous metals industry will increase as global development drives consumption of more raw materials. It is not just a question of volume. It is, quite importantly so, a question of complexity. As the world uses up more of the metals that can be found in the Earth's crust, the more challenging it becomes to find new deposits and to extract the metals they contain. What we see is more complex mining seams that contain a greater degree of impurities. These impurities can, of course, be other metals, and many ores today contain a mixture of precious, specialty, and base metals. These more complex ores give rise to ever more complex byproducts being generated by our customers as they refine the concentrates to produce metal. So while we will certainly retain the ability to treat all types of materials, including end-of-life materials like electronic scrap, the main growth area for us in the near term is this growing market for complex secondaries. How are we set to increase capacity in practice? As you know, we have been investing in the Hoboken site consistently since the inauguration of the new flow sheet at the end of the 1990s. Let me recap some of the main developments at the site. The slides that I will use to show that are a simplified representation of the flow sheet, of course. The first phase of investments back in the second half of the 90s included the installation of an ISA smelter, the construction of new precious metals refineries, and improvements to the blast furnace and the lead refinery. By the mid-2000s, we had installed a brand new leaching and electrowinning plant for the copper residue streams. We had upgraded the special metals refinery, added capacity to the sulfuric acid plant, and built a new pre-concentration facility to speed up the flow of precious metals through the process. Of course, in the background during this time, we were also gradually debottlenecking the capacity of the smelter itself, a process that has continued through to this year. The most recent major investments that we have made can be considered as preparation steps for the plans that we are announcing today. These include an upgrade and expansion of sampling and assaying operations, an expansion upgrade of gas cleaning and water treatment capabilities. With these preparatory investments reaching or nearing completion, the 100 million euro investment plan for the next 2 years will essentially focus on the smelter itself and the blast furnace. Obviously, I cannot go into much technical detail on what exact changes we'll be making. Suffice to say at this stage that they will involve some significant modifications and they will incorporate recent technology developments, including those that have been tested in the UHT pilot facility over the past 2 years. Our intention is to carry out the bulk of the modifications during the maintenance shutdowns, so it is possible that those would be somewhat longer than usual. Assuming that the permitting process is completed by the middle of next year, this should put us in a position to start bringing the new capacity on stream in the course of 2016. Based on the projected availability of materials, the investments should start to be accretive from an EBIT perspective from that same time as well. In terms of financial returns, we clearly expect a positive contribution above or well above the cost of capital thereafter. As I have mentioned in the past, it is unrealistic, though, to expect that new residue streams would necessarily attract the same level of returns that we are enjoying at present. This being said, it is important that we pursue those opportunities that create value and which are aligned with our focus on complexity, flexibility, and reliability while achieving best-in-class performance. As you know, we have been exploring several other expansion avenues, some of which might entail investments in other regions. I would like to clarify that these options have not been discarded because of the investment plan in Hoboken. The reality is that market and regulatory developments give us more time to pursue these options once we will have completed the Hoboken expansion. This is the case, for instance, of the battery recycling business. This said, I would like to now open the floor to questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our first question from Tony Jones of Redburn. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got a couple, actually. Firstly, just going back to your comment on the new residue contracts being lower return, just thinking about all the moving parts here, should we be modelling then that volume grows from 2016 but margin starts to contract from that time? And then related to that, is it right to assume that depreciation and recycling is going to step up? And I had a quick look at this, and it looks like where we are at the moment, it looks like the depreciation could go up from, say, the 45 to 50 million euro a year in this division, maybe up to 60, 65. It's just help if that's sort of the right way to think about it. And then finally, just comparing the cost or the capital cost of this expansion compared to peers, in terms of sort of net capacity per euro, your expansion seems to be extremely favorable compared to other companies. Just maybe help us just think about why that is. Thanks very much.
Okay, so maybe let me start, Tony, with the last question. So the cost of expansion is, I believe, favorable because we're building on existing infrastructure. And you have to bear in mind that in the past few years, we have invested significant amounts of money to prepare for the expansion, and actually we have debottlenecked some of the main equipment at the periphery of the smelter and the blast furnace. So the investments in assaying and sampling, the investments in gas cleaning, water treatment, etc., are actually part of the overall picture if you look at the total cost of the expansion. Because the expansion wouldn't have been possible or wouldn't be possible without these preparatory steps. This being said, indeed, we're building on existing facilities, infrastructure, competencies, and this makes it an attractive growth option, not only for us internally if we compare it with alternative options, but also externally if we compare it with competitive situations, indeed. Depreciation is indeed set to increase, moving to your second question, as a result of this new investment phase. However, you have to bear in mind that the new investment wave is to a certain extent going to replace the current investment wave. So it's not fully additive to the current investment levels. There is a big overlap in terms of numbers. But still depreciation will increase slightly. In terms of volumes, I would say that it is somewhat difficult to comment on the volumes for the next 2 years because of some of the disruptions we may have from the investments being carried out. And as I mentioned previously, it is possible that we would have to extend some of the regular maintenance shutdowns in order to carry out the modifications. So it's too early to tell or to comment on the potential volume impact of that compared to the fact that the expansion is coming on stream. But clearly, starting in 2016, yes, the additional volumes should become available. Now, in your first question, you also asked about margin contraction. I'm not sure I fully understand what you mean by contraction, because we did not talk of any contraction for the existing margins. What I meant is that the additional volumes are not likely to come at the same returns on capital invested than the performance we have today. But I didn't talk of a contraction of margins, and definitely not for the current business. I don't know if that clarifies the point.
It does, yeah, that's very helpful, actually. It just relates to one small follow-up. Sort of thinking about it, you've sort of told us what the CapEx number is, but should we be also thinking there's additional operating costs, so additional OPEX, or is it that as the new asset starts up over the next few years, we'll see quite a bit of operational gearing coming through from the new volume, or is it just that there'll be a lot of extra sort of additional operating costs that's going to go with it? Thank you.
There are going to be additional operating expenses as a result of the expansion. This being said, the gearing will be favorable, and that's part of the attraction of this expansion project compared to a greenfield options or alternatives, for instance, is that indeed you create more leverage.
Right, that's very helpful. Thanks, Mark.
Our next question comes from Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. I had two questions about current trading conditions, actually, or about the current state of recycling, and also two questions about the future investment. So the first question on current trading is that, can you tell us why the availability of industrial byproducts has increased, as you state in your press release? Secondly, I was wondering if you could tell us more about the maintenance shutdowns you have done this year and the impact on capacity or volumes, because if I remember correctly, in the last conference call, you said that you wanted to wait for the maintenance shutdown in Q3 before you could talk about potential volumes or capacity. And then about the future investment, is there any risk at the moment that you see of not getting approval from either from your board or from the authorities? And then finally, about UHT, if I understand correctly, that investment will follow after this current investment of 100 million. Is that correct, or is it different? Thank you.
Okay. Let me start with your first question about the current trading conditions. So the availability of industrial residues continues to be very supportive indeed, because we see, first of all, a continued increase in industrial production and demand for metals that drive the activities of some of the industries that are key suppliers of residue streams to us, and because the trend of increasing complexity is supporting our operation and our business. The maintenance shutdowns, after the maintenance shutdowns, during the maintenance shutdown, we have carried out a certain number of modifications and investments, that debottlenecking investments, that have a favorable impact on the available capacity. This being said, it doesn't mean that this capacity can be fully utilized in the short term, for the reasons I've mentioned of the time it will take to carry out the new phase of investments and the impact it can have on the operations that we have. Now let me move to your questions about the new investment. Do I see a risk of not getting approvals? Well, there is always a risk, I would say, but I would say that I'm very confident today that we will obtain both the approval of the authorities for the permits, and we have engaged in discussions and see no hurdle today in that process. So I'm confident that we will obtain the permits in due time. And primarily because what we propose to do continues to be in line with the very stringent environmental policy that the region has, and we continue to focus on the tightest environmental standards and the best technology to reach the best possible environmental performance. So I don't see there a major risk. I'm very confident that this will work. And as far as the board is concerned, the point is that this investment fits fully in the strategy of expansion of the recycling activities that is supported by the board. So once the permits have been obtained and all the technical details have been worked out, I would expect no issue and no delays in obtaining approval. Now let me move to your fourth question about the UHT. An investment in a larger scale UHT will not necessarily follow this phase of investment. What we wanted to clarify is actually that some of the new processes that have been tested as part of the UHT pilot operation are being integrated in the flow sheet as part of the next phase of investment during the next 2 years. So that's part of the 100 million investments. Will we at one point in time build a standalone separate UHT? That remains to be seen.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Evgenia Molotova of Berenberg. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hello, thanks a lot for taking my questions. I have several. The first one is actually regarding your capacity expansion. You basically say that you expect it to be EBIT accretive from the first year of operation. I was just wondering what kind of metal price assumptions do you use in your calculations relative to the current precious metal prices. Second one is on availability of industrial residues. The industrial companies like Rubis and Boliden, etc., they actually didn't increase, they didn't see any improvement in smelting volumes. So, of lead or copper or zinc in recent quarters. And so I was just wondering how you see better availability of residues without increasing smelting volumes. And the last one is on the cost cutting. After H1, you said that potentially there will be more cost cutting in energy materials and performance products to come, so we potentially can expect further improvements in these divisions. And if you could give any clarity whether you will have more cost cutting this year or not. Thank you.
Okay, so let me start. For the EBIT accretion doesn't require high metal prices. Obviously, we are happier when metal prices are higher because then we can achieve exuberant returns. But even at modest metal prices, we can definitely reach a very decent returns on capital invested and well above those of any competitor in the industry. And the EBIT accretion is not banking on better metal prices. Mm-hmm. Talking about the availability of industrial residues, you have to bear in mind that our business is global. So you used as an example the production situation of two European companies. This is a very small part of the picture. Our sourcing is global, and so you may assume that indeed the situation could be different in other regions than it is in for those two European companies. Players.
Rubis is just the biggest European copper smelter, so I thought that they're quite representative of the situation in Europe in general.
Again, suffice to say that our business is not a European business. It is a global business. We source from all over the world, and So the what you have isolated is not representative of our global sourcing picture. It is representative of a portion of that only, which is a limited number of European players. And then on the cost side, we are indeed implementing some further cost reduction and competitiveness measures in some of our performance materials activities. For instance, we announced the closure of a plant in Australia, cost reductions in one of our technical materials activities in China, and there are also discussions underway in order to reduce the costs in our building products activities.
And will we see impact already this year from those?
Well, it's a continuing process. You will see impact this year of the measures that were decided and implemented earlier, and the measures that we have just announced will likely have an effect in the course of next year, start to have an effect in the course of next year.
Thank you.
Yep.
Our next question comes from Rakesh Patel of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi there. Just a couple of questions, if I may. First of all, I guess just I know it's difficult to say, but if you could give us some indication on the hedging book, metal prices have been quite volatile, so perhaps you could update us in terms of what proportion of contracts are still hedged relative to the first half, and how does that really compare on a normative basis? And then second of all, just looking into next year and slightly related to the previous question, is that if metal prices were to remain where they are at the moment, would it be fair it'd be difficult to grow EBIT in recycling next year, or what are the mitigating factors that would help? And then finally, perhaps some quantification of the impact the shutdown had on the smelting and recycling business as well, though I know that can be quite difficult. Thanks very much.
Okay, so let me start with the easy one. No, we cannot or are not willing to quantify the impact of the shutdown. I'm not going to go into that level of detail. Now, let me move maybe to a more fundamental question. That's the impact of metal prices. And let's be clear, and I think this is nothing new. You know that we make more earnings when metal prices are high. So if metal prices stay where they are today, we are going to have lower earnings in recycling next year compared to, the price levels that we see today for precious metals and most specialty metals are well below the average levels that we have received for 2013, taking into account the prices that prevailed in the first part of the year and the hedges that had been entered into at higher levels. So if prices stay where they are, no, we cannot match the results of this year in recycling indeed. All other things remaining equal, of course, because at this stage I cannot provide any comment on how the mix will evolve and some other factors that are important in determining the profitability of the recycling operations. And also, you have to bear in mind that the metal prices have also an indirect effect on the results, and that's through the availability of some of the residues, and in particular, the gold residues from the jewelry industry and from individuals are really the availability of such residues is a direct function of the gold price, and if prices stay where they are today, it is likely that availability will remain somewhat subdued. Then on the hedge book, Philip, you want to take that question, please?
I mean, the hedge book has not fundamentally changed. As you know, we have some hedges in place going into next year. We've also mentioned that typically when metal prices tend down, that we hedge tend to less hedge less, sorry, when metal prices go up and are high, we tend to hedge more. So there's not really any change to be mentioned compared to what we talked to you about at the half-year results.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Simon Fickling of Exane. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon, Mark. A couple of questions left, please. Firstly, can you just clarify that this it is just adapting the current smelter? This isn't a new smelter, and just help us understand how that adds what seems like quite a substantial 40% to capacity onto a smelter that my understanding was running at full capacity for quite a number of years. Perhaps it's the definition of capacity could perhaps be clarified on as in terms of weight or anything else. Secondly, at H1 you talked of higher refining charges, and I wonder if that's still the case. Obviously the recycling business, there's the metals side, but then there's also the treatment side, treatment charges side, and perhaps you could help us get a split of momentum between the two. Thank you.
Yes, Simon. First of all, let me clarify that indeed we're talking of adapting the existing smelter and not building a new one. So that's the whole idea, indeed, of the investment program. Then moving to your other question, yes, we continue to benefit from high refining and recycling charges. The effects that we have described, the negative effects that we have described as part of the update are related on one side, and that's the most significant effect to the metal price effect, precious metals and specialty metals, those that cannot be hedged by definition. And to a lesser extent, there was also a slight volume impact due to the second maintenance shutdown. But refining charges are holding up well.
And so just following up on the first one, it does seem at first glance that adding 40% capacity onto that existing smelter does seem very attractive. Is there any guidance, any more colour you can add?
Indeed, I mean it's attractive. It's an attractive expansion, and because as I mentioned earlier, because we're building on an existing infrastructure and existing competencies, a lot of infrastructure-related investments have been already done, so indeed it is the most attractive project that we could develop to tap into near-term growth opportunities in the recycling segment. For other projects, we have more time to make up our mind.
Okay, thank you.
And maybe just to add a bit more color, sorry, Simon. As I mentioned also earlier, the purpose that we see there is to capture mostly the growth in industrial residues. This doesn't mean that we don't want to process more end-of-life materials like electronic scrap or spent catalysts. We will retain the full flexibility to do that. And in theory, there will be more capacity to do that as well. But as you know, with the flexible flow sheet that we have and our ability to change the mix quite frequently, we will seek the best market opportunities to fill the additional capacity. And it is my expectation today that this will be mainly done through industrial byproducts. But of course, as market conditions change over time, the mix may change too. So the full flexibility will be retained.
Very clear. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Carol Chan of UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Sorry. Hi. Thanks for taking my questions. I have two. So on battery materials, could you disclose what your current battery materials growth is and if we are seeing any contribution at the EBIT level from now on? And how do you expect the proposed delay in the 2020 CO2 legislation in Europe to impact your capacity growth plans? That's my first question. And then I guess my second question is on the, I think in the release you indicate the lower availability of autocatalyst scrap. Are you seeing hoarding activity again with the collectors? And how many months worth of materials do you think they have? Thank you.
Okay. Carol, regarding the first question, no, we're not disclosing in data for individual units like the growth rate or the contribution. Suffice to say that the significant portion of the growth in energy materials can be attributed to the growth in the rechargeable battery materials unit. Now let's move to the other question, which is the delay in the CO2 regulation in Europe likely to impact our growth plan? Well, actually, I don't believe so. Because first of all, it's still a way out, and so we don't have all the details of how the regulations will be eventually implemented, and so how they will affect the market development. This being said, the growth plans that we are working on are predicated on platform developments that are in the pipeline already, and that will actually not be affected by the discussions about the 2020 regulations. And you may recall from a previous update that we are currently working on platforms that will be introduced on the roads in the 2017-2018 timeframe. So these are indeed completely unaffected by that discussion about the longer term. It also remains to be seen how certain states will try to incentivize, I would say, early adoption, and that depends to a large extent or very often on the availability of budgets for that. So I think it's too early to talk about an impact. Our plans are, for the time being, completely unchanged compared to what we disclosed earlier.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I missed your third question. Could you would you mind repeating it?
It's on the hoarding, the lower availability of autocatalyst scrap. I think you said you weren't seeing that many that much material coming through. So I was just wondering if you are seeing hoarding at the collector's level, and you know if there is, what sort of how many months worth of inventory are they holding?
Okay. I see two phenomenons in the spent autocat market. One is there is some degree of hoarding indeed. It is difficult, if not impossible, for me to quantify that, but we see some of it. And with a number of collectors banking on a recovery in platinum prices. This being said, there is a second phenomenon, and that is the competitive pressure. There has been increased competitive pressure in that segment for the past several months, and that has an impact on the volumes that are accessible to us, because we don't want to compromise on pricing and margins, as we have the flexibility to turn to alternative materials. So it's a choice also that we make not to compete on prices in an aggressive manner to fill the capacity with spent catalyst, and we continue to be selective and target materials that offer the best margins. But indeed, this is a phenomenon. There is increased competitive pressure in that subsegment.
Okay, and is there any change to the competitive environment in e-scrap?
No, not compared to what was discussed earlier this year. There is indeed quite some competition in that market, with increased processing capacity having come on stream, in particular in Europe. But our position remains very strong, as we have mentioned at times, on the high-end segment, so treating the most complex of these materials. And we have seen a continued growth in our supply of these materials recently.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Serena Zidema of Kempen. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you very much. I have actually one question. My apologies if the question is maybe already asked. I might have missed it. But if I understood correctly, this year the effect of the bottleneck will be offset by volumes lost due to the plant closure. But could you please give us some feel for what the effect of the bottlenecking will be on the full year 2014 results? Thank you very much.
Okay, well, it's not so much that the effect was lost this year. It is that the investments have been carried out in the course of this year, so that actually the additional volumes or the additional capacity was not truly available until recently. As far as next year is concerned, as I mentioned earlier, it is difficult to make out today how much of that additional capacity arising from the debottlenecking could or will be utilized and can be utilized, because that will depend to a large extent on how long we will have to shut down the smelter for not only maintenance but also at the same time to carry out the next wave of investment projects and technical modifications. So I cannot tell you today, but I would not at this stage bank on a material increase in volumes.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Geoff Hare of HSBC. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Good afternoon. I've just got three quick questions. First of all, you mentioned in the auto catalyst business that the diesel proportion had continued to decline in Europe. I wonder if you could give a sense as to how much that had continued to decline as a mix of the business. And also, I'm just wondering how long the ramp-up will be of the new investment in recycling. You say it starts in 2016. When would you expect that to be filled? And then thirdly, you mentioned that returns will exceed the cost of capital. Obviously, for the group, that's a given. I'm wondering whether or not the new capacity, the returns you will get on that, will it exceed the average for the recycling business in terms of returns? Thank you.
So let me start with the last question, and because I believe that was also mentioned earlier in the call. No, you should not expect the returns from the additional capacity to match the average returns we have in recycling today. As I mentioned earlier, the returns will be above or well above the cost of capital. Otherwise, the project wouldn't go through and wouldn't be described as an attractive growth project. But as I mentioned, we cannot extrapolate from the current levels of return that we have for the reasons that were described also earlier. The duration of the ramp up is difficult also for me to quantify today. It's a bit too early to tell. Let us give us the time to build the stuff, and then we will figure out at the time of startup how much time it will take to ramp up the additional capacity. And your first question was about the diesel proportion, which has almost stabilized. I would say now it's 1% down compared to previous quarters, but the pace of decline has slowed down considerably, and we see a stabilization in that proportion. And suffice to say that diesel remains a very significant business segment for us, because the revenues and the margins that can be achieved there are higher than in gasoline applications. And we have a strong position in that business, obviously, in the passenger segment.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Matthew Waugh of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. I just had a couple of follow-ups, one on the capacity expansion. So you highlight that you expect pretty much flat volumes in 2014 net-net. Is that going to be the case for 2015 as well? And can you just give an idea of the operational impact on upgrading the smelter? Do you have to shut down all of your refining operations while it's going on? And then secondly, just a question to sort of clarify on the mix situation. Given you're filling the new capacity up with industrial residue, I assume this will bring down the overall sort of mix of the recycling business, and hence that's why you're expecting slightly lower return on capital for the new capacity. Thank you.
It's really too early to comment on the volumes for 2015, clearly. Let us see how things work and how the investments progress when we carry them out as part of the regular maintenance shutdowns next year, and then we should be in a position to comment on the 2014 and obviously at a certain stage on the 2015 volume development. It's too early to tell. I'm not sure I fully understood your second question. Would you mind repeating it?
It's just that you're filling the incremental new capacity up with industrial residue. I assume this will have a negative sort of mix impact on the overall mix going into the smelter. Is that the case? And is that why the return on capital is lower?
No, not necessarily. Industrial residues are not necessarily less attractive in terms of margins than end-of-life materials. So, no. This is not the case.
Thank you.
We'll take a follow-up question from Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Oh, thank you very much. Two questions on recycling and one on catalysis. First, on the phasing of the 100 million investment, is it logical to assume that the majority of that will spend once you get the approval, so let's say in the second half of next year and the rest in 2015? And then perhaps related to that, does that also mean that in that time frame when you implement, when you do the majority of the CapEx budget, will we also see there the majority of the shutdowns, so longer, or would we also see even more frequent shutdowns? And then a final question on catalysis. You just spoke about the share of diesel in Europe. I was wondering, what is your outlook or your view on the share of diesel in 2014? Thank you. Thank you.
Your assumption regarding how CapEx is spread is reasonable, I believe, although some of the money will start to be spent on continued work on detailed engineering over the next few months during the period where the permit applications are being processed. But overall, yes, it's a safe assumption that the bulk of the spend will start once the permits have been cleared. Will it mean more frequent shutdowns? I do not expect that. That's not what we have planned for today. The idea is to use the regular maintenance shutdowns and possibly extend them if needed, but not to increase the number of shutdowns. And it is typically, we have many different plants and sections in the Hoboken facility, and not all of them are being shut down for maintenance simultaneously. So when the smelter and the blast furnace are being shut down, it doesn't mean that the refineries are not producing. Oh, okay. Sorry, I forgot. Yeah, and then there was a question about diesel, the diesel share for next year. Well, as I mentioned, or as I alluded to earlier, the higher the diesel share, the better off we are. As a catalyst player and as a catalyst industry, in a way, but I'm really not in a position to tell you what it's likely going to be next year. I'm afraid I don't know.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Adam Collins of Liberum. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Yeah, I had three remaining questions, please. Firstly, just to clarify on the maintenance shutdown in the second half, could you just clarify that fell fully into the third quarter? And that's the first one. The second one was a question on clarifying the arrangements for processing end-of-life battery materials looking forward. I wonder if you could just comment on what's happening to the pilot UHT plant as you build further capacity at the main smelter and furnace. As we build volumes in battery materials towards the end of the decade, just to clarify, is that then going to go through the main Hoboken smelter and furnace? Or will there have to be sort of separate arrangements in the midterm to meet any increased volumes in battery recycling involving a dedicated plant? And then finally, maybe one for Philip. Could you just remind us, Philip, what your best guess is at this stage for the second half tax rate and where you think it might go in 2014? Thanks a lot.
I'm happy you had a question for Philip. We can share the load. The shutdown was almost entirely in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And actually, the pilot UHT plant will continue to operate as a pilot primarily because there are still quite a number. There is still quite a lot of R&D work that we want to perform in recycling. As I mentioned earlier, the projects that were on the table so far are not being discarded. We have more time to pursue them, and the pilot will continue to operate as a pilot. And when necessary, we will also process spent batteries, because we continue to collect the spent batteries, of course, and recycle them in the UHT facility. There is sufficient capacity in the pilot facility to treat spent batteries, spent lithium-ion batteries, for a number of years before the market really takes off and the availability of such batteries becomes so massive that it would require a new investment to be made. That's also what I meant when I said that other projects will continue to be pursued, and we have more time to do that. One of them is the battery recycling activity. We have, considering the roadmap for the introduction of electrified cars, their projected penetration in the market, the lifetime of batteries, we have a number of years ahead of us to prepare for industrial scale operations as opposed to pilot scale operations today. And today, the idea is to process batteries using UHT technologies, but I cannot rule out that some of the developments that we'll continue to pilot lead to another solution, industrial scale solution, in the longer term. It's really too early to tell, and again, we have quite a bit of time ahead of us for that. The good news is that we have technology that can be scaled up as fast as necessary in function of how the industry develops. And I'll hand over to Philip to address your question regarding tax.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
On tax, today for this year, we'd still stick to the mid-20s guidance. So basically no change compared to the level we had in the first half of the year for next year. I mean, unfortunately, it's not exact science. Basically, it depends also on the regional profit mix. But let's say that the fundamental trend should be up, basically pointing towards a gradual increase, I would say, over a number of years to something close to 30%, over a number of years, that is. But so for this year, mid-20s remains the guidance. And if we have something more specific, then certainly we will brief you on that.
Okay. Thank you.
We will now take a follow-up question from Evgenia Molotova of Berenberg. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello. Yes, I just had one question regarding HDD capacity and the ramp-up of this capacity, because consensus basically expects that you will already be highly profitable next year, and I was just wondering, you have this one line in Florange, which is already on stream, and then China and another line will come on stream next year. So basically, when do you expect you will be operating at full capacity? at HDD? And the second one, just to clarify, a lot of people asked it already, but low returns in new capacity of recycling is basically mostly because the current capacity is already heavily depreciated, and this one will be absolutely new. So this is the key component. Thank you.
Let me start with the second question. Obviously, this is part of the equation. Clearly, the new investment will add quite a bit of capital employed, indeed, in the first instance, it will not yield the same results because the existing capacity is to a certain extent depreciated already. That is part of the equation. The other part, without going into details there, is related to working capital assumptions. Today we have, by and large, negative working capital in our precious metals refining activity, and we should not extrapolate completely from that situation for the additional volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And then talking about the ramp up in HDD, there is indeed one line which is on stream now, a second line which is being built in Europe, the plant which is being built in China. The ramp up is going to start in the course of next year. So I would not expect full capacity to be reached before 2015.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Our next question comes from Philippe Depau of ING. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon, Mark. Two questions from my side. The first question is on the Hoboken CapEx again. So given the spread of the investments over 2 years or more, and perhaps some other investments being done, is it a fair assumption that CapEx for the group in 2014 and 15 will remain at the current level of roughly 250 million euros per year? That is the first question. And the second question, I'm not sure if I, in the end, understood your comment well on the volume impact from the additional shutdowns for the expansion, but on the negative side and on the positive side, the fact that the debottlenecking probably has some capacity expansion potential, is it going to be net-net? Is it too early to say what the net impact will be in 2014, or is it a neutral impact in 2014? I'm not sure if I understood your comment correctly.
Well, Philippe, it is too early to tell because we don't know exactly the number of days that will be available for to utilize that capacity in the course of 2014 and 15 because of the investment project. So that's why I mentioned that it is probably safer to assume today that a flat capacity development, a flat capacity utilization or volume development for the short term. It's simply too early to tell because of the investments having to be carried out. And then your first question regarding the CapEx level, yes, I think it is a fair assumption to expect that CapEx at the group level will remain at the same levels, the same order of magnitude as the ones you are seeing this year.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Peter Cartwright of Fisk. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Yes, it's a question on battery materials. There's been quite an avalanche of electric vehicles announced at various motor shows. So can you give us a flavor of what the dominant cathode material is for all the new vehicles?
Well, Peter, the answer is very simple. It's NMC is the dominant chemistry for all the new vehicles that are either introduced now on the market or being announced, with one notable and well-known exception. That's this very successful American company producing high-end EVs that is working, if my information is correct, with NCA.
Fine, that's good. Thank you.
we have no further questions. I would like to now hand back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, so thank you at this stage. So I would like to close the formal part of the call, and thank you very much for your participation. Of course, as usual, our team will be available to address your follow-on questions, so please feel free to get in touch with Evelyn, and she will make sure that your questions get decently processed. Thank you, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.